Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jaka. This episode is called Minnesota. The idea behind this episode is that we're going to have some shorter pieces from new reporters talking about a myriad of topics. You're going to hear tons of new voices, plus an awesome interview Liv did with the band Downtown Boys. All that and more, starting right now. The beginning of the year brings excitement no matter what group you're part of. Here at Radio K, we just had our studio tour where we get a bunch of new people to come see the station for the first time. I had my amazing friend Luke Roberts go around with a recorder and sort of just capture the sounds of the station. He talked to people, mainly staff, but some volunteers too, who were just excited about radio and have ideas for how to make the station even cooler than it already is. How are you feeling on this lovely studio tour day?
Oh, pretty good. I'm going to make some more coffee, I think.
So really great. Not tired at all.
Radio K is really cool because it's alternative, but not too alternative. Like, very listenable.
Listenably alternative. I like that. Why isn't that our slogan? Listenably alternative? Is that a word?
Yeah.
Listenably?
Radio K is the best radio station in the entire universe. I owe my life to Radio K and nothing else.
That's it. Radio K is cool and you should listen to it.
It's the only thing on campus that you can listen to and also have a good time at the same time.
Radio K puts the K after radio.
I'm really excited about maybe getting to be a part of the radio.
Yeah, that's great. You're the first person that's had like a genuine answer, so thank you for that.
All right, I'm always glad to help out.
I think the studio tour is always great. I think it's super fun and it gets people really interested.
Definitely.
I think I'm not helping though.
You're helping. Don't say that.
It's too late.
Do you think radio is the last great American frontier?
Yes, obviously.
That's some manifest destiny crap. Get it out of here. There's no such thing as an American frontier.
Radio K is the only place I know with Smash 64.
I'm excited to finally pursue my interest in DJing, possibly with a co-host who is also my best friend.
That's awesome. Who is this co-host?
You can't see them, but she's right next to me.
Robot.
You have a robot co-host?
Yeah. I'm going to have a DJ set with my robot co-host. It's going to be called Tune Into Cyborg Time.
Tune Into Cyborg, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Better than anything I've ever come up with.
Tune Into Beep, 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 Boop, 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 Boop.
The transition to college is objectively weird. You move to a floor with dozens of people you've never met and live with them in a very small space. Elizabeth Yost brings us this story of miniature living.
This is a collection of voices of students who have just moved to their home for the year. They are all reflecting on the strange loneliness and excitement that both come with moving in a new place. They're figuring out how to make time to study when you're constantly surrounded by smart, interesting people, and discovering what happens when you're surrounded by maybe too many interesting people.
I live here on the 6th floor of Middlebrook Hall on the west bank of the University of Minnesota. It's at the point where it's starting to not feel like a really long summer camp anymore. It's beginning to transition into kind of, this is your life now. Never really experienced something like this before. Just the level of everyone here is incredibly dedicated to either what they are or trying to find out who they are, and I'm just impressed every day. And I guess I do worry that one day you know, my tolerance is going to run out for that, and maybe I won't. I just won't feel motivated to go see people anymore. I'll just kind of crash and burn, you know, socially. But that hasn't happened yet. So we'll see how that goes. Maybe it certainly helps with the people who I live with and how friendly everyone is. So really, I can't complain so far.
And it's been really great so far. There's a lot of very talkative people on our floor, which so far it's been pretty good. We'll hope it stays that way. There's just always, it's nice to have so many people around all the time, so that way you always have somebody to talk to when you need to. I don't think I realized how much there would be people being around. As of right now, I still really like having so many people around, but I think in another week or so, if you ask me, or maybe a month, then I'll probably be like, I just want to be alone sometimes. But that's not necessarily that much of an option. I think it's really cool to see how everybody comes from such a different place, like whether it's just a different state, just different traditions that they came from, and yet we're all like in a community together that it doesn't seem to like matter that much, like where you came from or like what your path on your way here was.
A lot of people on our floor in Middlebrook are very open, and they're very overall nice to each other. That has made the transition from living in a town of 13,000 people to now coming to a city and having a college that is even bigger than your hometown. It's made it that much easier just because you already feel like you have a small community.
Moving to college is hard. So is making friends. Doing it all at once is exhausting, but can also be so rewarding. Worrying comes with the territory here, but so does a group of people who know exactly how you're feeling. From Real College Podcast, I'm Elizabeth Yost.
Moving into dorms is weird, sure, but so is moving into a house with a bunch of other people. You don't always know them and what they think of you. Reporter Nathan Fervoy talked to his new roommates about what they thought of him when they first met him.
A running idea of mine since I was a kid has been that any two strangers, no matter what their background, when placed face to face with one another, should in theory be able to bond and become friends. While perhaps a naive thought, I still like to believe it is true on a base level through each new situation I might find myself in. Cut to college, the ultimate tester of this idea, with strangers in class, strangers down the hall, and strangers in my house. This year I find myself living in a house with six completely new people. All had already become friends in the dorms the year before, while I, the addition, signed on to the lease late in the spring and only met with my housemates once or twice before. When a spot opened on their lease, a mutual friend put us in contact, and a few months later, I am face to face with these six strangers, strangers who being friendly with, or at the very least, not hating, is determining of our mutual quality of life for the next year.
When you first met me, or just maybe even before you met me, what was your first impression of me?
I was like, fuck this guy. No lie. I was like, who is this dude trying to get up in our house? Why do we need this other dude? I was a little like salty at Luke for the most part.
Yeah.
For like backing out and all that. I had the image already set in my mind. Mm-hmm. But then they're like, we got this other guy, Nathan. We come to the trivia night where we're going to meet you. And I'm putting on my thug face. I was like, I don't want to be at this this dude. we get there and like I saw your gang walking around. I was like, that's him, he doesn't know what he's doing. Harry wasn't there, her phone was dead, so kind of showed up. And just looking around for random people, I was like, it's him. So walk up to him like, that's our table, and I left. It's like, Harriet, this is your friend, I'm gonna go get you. I went and got Harriet. We went out and we went out to the food, right? And it was like a chill time. It was like, after that night, I was like, he's not so bad.
Yeah. When you saw me the first time, what were your first impressions? Brutally honest. make me sad.
I think you played it pretty well, actually. My memory of this event is very me-focused, and I think it was... It was at trivia night, right? You played off the fact that we were doing a nerdy activity very well. very cool about the fact that it was a very uncool thing to do.
You come in, you have Bose headphones or something. Yeah, and I mostly saw you as like this guy who is really into music, like those like a very chill person, like what you kind of associate with music, and that's kind of what I thought of you before I had even met you. Like that's what I was thinking you were gonna be, and like you come and you're the like embodiment of my thought, and you're like exactly how I expected it, and I mean I really dig it, and I was excited that we were gonna live in a house together. So like that's what I was feeling.
That's cool. But did you think I was gonna be a pretentious act?
Although no, I honestly didn't. Like I. Because I have another friend who is similar in the sense that, like, he listens to a lot of music, and he I kind of based my assumption of you off him.
You want to hear Grace's first impression that she won't tell you?
What?
Well, so you come into that Five Guys, right, with, like, the huge headphones, and you talk about this obscure Brazilian musician that you're...
Yeah.
I remember
that.
Yeah.
And later, she was like... talking about how you were putting forth this persona, right, of like music hood, that you were so into music, and she was like, damn it, he's gonna be the music guy. I thought I was gonna be the music person. She's got this like piano in her room, and like, but she's cool with it.
Yeah, now we're getting somewhere. Yeah.
My thing is that if I did have any bad assumptions I made about you the first time I met you, I don't really remember them anymore because none of them have really followed through with my assumptions. So I have, like, you've broken those judgments that I made about you in the beginning.
Founded in Providence, Rhode Island's DIY music scene 6 years ago, the bilingual punk band Downtown Boys has since made headlines in the New York Times, NPR, and Pitchfork, playing at Rite of Passage music fests like Coachella and South by Southwest, and has been called America's most exciting punk band by the Rolling Stone, all while making really smart and hard-driving music. Here's Liv Riggins with more.
We're gonna do a set for you. This first song is about knowing your context, knowing your history, and knowing that both go way deeper, go far too deep than to be able to reduce politics to a set of consumer decisions. Is much more important. We gotta organize.
With up-and-coming punk band Downtown Boys Friday night before their show at the Triple Rock. The opening band was still sound-checking, so we headed out to the van to talk about their recent album, the deeply intertwined nature of the personal and political, and some of the highlights of their tour so far.
You can come in the van.
Should I jump in the van? Or?
Yeah. I'm Victoria.
I'm Joey, too.
I'm Joey DeFrancesco.
Saxophone player Joe DeGeorge and bassist Mary Relegado joined us later in the interview.
To start off, you guys have gotten like a lot of coverage, a lot of attention recently. Has it changed anything you do?
It really doesn't change that much the day-to-day of like our lives or the way that the band operates. There's just kind of like more work to be done in terms of like getting the record out there. I guess it does change how many people hear the record without ever coming to a show, which is kind of weird to know that more people are listening to the music and like they may never make it out to a gig, because for the longest time you found out about us from shows. But yeah, it hasn't really changed much like materially. There's like a lot more just like weird gossip that goes on, or like short-lived flames of like haterade, just like of the growing pangs of leaving like traditionally DIY scene. But in whatever scene we're in right now, we still are pretty DIY and punk, so yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you guys also put out a new album recently. It's like pretty like explicitly political, and like why do you think that like representation or getting that message out there, why is that important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we've always done as a band, and kind of what our mission has been since we started doing shows, really, in maybe like 2012. So I think it's really a continuation of what we've been talking about on all our records, going back to then. And I think it's just kind of a natural offshoot of what we're concerned with and must live with as people in the world. You know, when we started the bands and started writing songs, it wasn't like a mission statement, like, this is what we're going to make our band about. But, you know, what you hear on the record is like what we're able to write songs about and what personal experiences are, and what we see going on in our communities and in the broader world. And I think anyone making any kind of art, that's the case. So for us, you know, that's what we're coming from it at. And I think that that's true. And you can do that with whatever job you're in, whatever type of worker you are. You can push an agenda that's, you know, anti-oppression, that's anti-capitalist, that's like pro-organizing and pro-creating this some sort of new world. And we happen to be musicians and happen to be doing this work at this moment, and so that's what we try to do with it.
Great. So I guess another question for anyone would be, like, when did you start getting into music, and like when did you start getting into like activism and politics, and were those always together, or like was there a certain point when they came together for you?
I think all of us in the band, like, it's really hard to be in Downtown Boys and not, you know, believe in some type of desire or hope for the way that the current world is ran, especially our country. So I think all of us, not to speak for everyone, but I think we all kind of have a natural intersection with, like, our art and our actions and our experiences and our, like, read of the world and of, like, the power dynamics that we're in right now. And then I think that, you know, we've all kind of participated in different ways in terms of from, like, being, like, community organizers to being activists to making other political music outside of Downtown Boys to, you know, being women, people of color in this world. So I think that's been pretty awesome just to know, like, in some ways, like, all of us have a piece of our existence that has been, like, very, you know, just being alive and existing is a political act if you're not coming from, like, the ruling class. But yeah, I think it's pretty natural to the band. Like, this tour, people will email us and ask to table, or they'll message people in the band and ask, you know, like, in Houston, that show was turned into a benefit. Or, like, people are also, I feel like, more forthcoming and asking to use the show space as a space for activism and politics, and that's been really great. Because when we're going to cities and communities that we don't know, we don't just want to like parachute down a bunch of like politics or something. So it's really cool when the public or when fans want to use the space for that.
Yeah, it's really cool. You said it's been with this tour recently. Do you have any guesses as to why it's like, you know, now and not other times?
I think just because more people know about the band, and then at home in Providence, we've done a lot of like benefit shows and worked with like community organizations and organizers there. And then all of us are pretty like vocal about where our politics lie. And then finally, I think because we're just in a watershed moment where like people who are trying to get things done are going to use any means necessary.
What kind of music, what kind of media are you guys into or listening to in your free time right now?
I've been listening to some podcasts. We listened to that This American Life Afrofuturist podcast the other day that had the band Clipping in it. That was really good.
I like Princess Nokia and a lot of SZA, and I like a lot of old post-punk shit. You know, my free time, if there's like a record store close by, I try to go and like... enjoy it. It's like my happy place.
Frank Ocean.
Last question would be, what's your best or like your favorite show you've done recently? And like, why was it so good?
I mean, we had a great show in Washington, D.C. the other day. That was real good. we had a great crowd there. I think people came... ready, and yeah, it was good.
All right.
And there was a show we played in McAllen, Texas, which is always our best, is always like a great show, a great time. But it was the first time that we played there not as just our own show and not part of a festival, and so it felt much more like, you know, it didn't have the like energy or hype of a festival. And it's a really special city that's like on the border of Mexico and Texas. And there's just like a really, really big like Mexican and Mexican American population, and people really like work so much like for the space to exist. But it's just like the best feeling show. Like there's so much hope and desire, and it just sometimes like when you go to a city, it's like, oh, like what good am I here, like what good is this show here? And there it just feels like you're such a part of the bigger context.
Yeah, I think like so many of the shows on this tour have been really amazing. One of my favorites was New Orleans. We played with a band called Special Interest, who like were just so good. They were local to New Orleans, and Solange came to our show, and we all freaked out because we just couldn't believe she was there. We love her so much.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm Liv Figgins for Radio K's Real College Podcast. With Lake Superior, the Mississippi River, and well over 10,000 lakes, we've got no shortage of water in our state. But it looks like simple H2O isn't cutting it for thirsty Minnesotans. In recent years, Minnesota has become the hub for local craft beverage producers. Today, there are over 110 craft breweries cranking out drinks across the state, according to the Brewers Association. That's to say nothing of homegrown soda makers like Joya or Whistler Soda and a host of local kombucha brewers. When it comes to wetting the whistle, Minnesota residents have some choices. Here's reporter Austin. He talked to a craft beverage producer who's revitalizing a traditional drink consumed by American farmers.
So I've got ginger honey mix here, and then this is my vinegar water batch. And so we're going to mix it all together.
That's Colleen Schlieper, a local beverage producer, showing me how she brews a drink called Switchel. Colleen is the founder and sole employee of St. Paul's Switchel, a company bottling the drink. Like a lot of people, I'd never heard of Switchel.
So it is a traditional farmstead drink, an American farmstead drink, and people used to drink it on their farms when they were cutting down hay. So that's why it's also got the name Haymaker's Punch.
Switchel is a vinegar-based elixir. It can be drank cold or hot, carbonated or flat. Some people even use it as a mixer for alcohol. It's actually pretty easy to make.
My concoction is a mix of fresh organic ginger, organic apple cider vinegar, and a wildflower honey that's produced here in Minnesota.
It takes Colleen about 6 hours to brew a batch. She boils ginger, honey, and water in one large pot, and then vinegar in another. It's a pretty straightforward process. The same can't be said for Switchel's name. Some people call it Switchel, some people call it Haymaker's Punch, and some have given the drink other monikers.
So we know Swizzle, Switch, Laura Ingalls Wilder called it ginger water. So there's a lot of different names for it because it was so old.
The exact origins of Switchel are sort of murky. Some say it came from the West Indies, but it's been around the U.S. since at least the 17th century. Colleen found out about Switchel after a friend recommended it to help with a cold.
And at first I was like, hey, that sounds really weird. And then I tried it, and it was really good, and it helped with my sore throat, and it helped with my nose.
Switchel's associated with a lot of health benefits. It's high in electrolytes. Like an early form of Gatorade, it helps counter dehydration. The vinegar base also serves as an anti-inflammatory. At the time, there were really no companies making Switchel. But Colleen found out the drink was growing in popularity.
A couple days later, we were reading something in Modern Farmer called, Are You Hip Enough to Drink Switchel?
So, she started to perfect her own recipe, mostly through trial and error.
Like, I was just in my kitchen drinking Switchel all the time.
Colleen thought it'd do well with folks in the Twin Cities. In 2015, she founded St. Paul Switchel. But Colleen isn't the only local beverage producer jumping in the market.
As most people know, there's like a huge craft beer market, but the craft beverage market seems to be really growing. There's a few of us out there.
So far, Switchel's a hit, at least for some people.
People who like vinegar absolutely love Switchel, and they are delighted to find it. And then other people are just like, huh, I've never heard of drinking vinegar before. This is really weird. Some people love it, and some people do not.
Here at Real College Podcast, we decide to make up our own mind. Some of our staff tried sampling Switchel.
Oh, that's not bad.
It didn't get me too well. I don't know about you guys.
It's not terrible.
It smells worse than it tastes.
The reviews were, well, let's say, mixed. But don't take our word. Try Switchel yourself. You can pick up a bottle of Haymaker's Punch at a variety of spots around the cities. And you can learn more at stpaulswitchell.com. For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Austin Magalis.
The University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus sits tucked away between both downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul, allowing for easy access to two of the best venues in the Twin Cities, First Avenue and the Palace Theater. After ongoing renovations over the span of 20 years, the Palace Theater has reopened in March of 2017, filling a gap in the Minneapolis-St. Paul music scene. This weekend, Sophie attended two different concerts, one on each side of the river.
On Friday night, I entered the First Avenue main room and an overwhelming surge of excited energy rushed my head. I've entered the Holy Land for Minnesota music, into the music venue that emerged amidst the Minnesota music renaissance of the 1970s and 80s. I'm here to see J. Rowdy Walston in the Business, a southern rock band known for their long hair, heavy guitar, and pounding piano. Although I've been going to First Avenue shows my entire 20-something life, First Avenue has been a mainstay from the Minneapolis music scene for longer than I've breathed air. On Saturday night, I made my way to St. Paul to visit the newly renovated Palace Theater. I was there to see experimental indie rock band Spoon, This is the second night that Spoon is playing in the venue, and both nights sold out. For every sold-out show at the Palace, which, after its reopening in March, most shows have been sold out, fills the theaters with 2,500 fans, an extra 1,000 in comparison to First Avenue's capacity. As soon as I entered the Palace Theater, I thought I was in the wrong place. You enter, and you think, maybe I should be seeing an opera or a large-scale theater production in this beautiful theater with intricate design and absolutely stunning architecture. But no. They took out all of the theater seats last year when they reopened. It's an open floor plan with a giant, beautiful proscenium arch fit for a spectacular. And that's what the show was. It was spectacular. The way the lighting and the stage and all of the LED lights that Spoon brought in made it an absolutely fabulous show, acoustically and aesthetically. After Spoon wrapped up on Saturday night, I walked a block southeast to Mickey's Diner to grab a bite to eat. It was there where I ran into a couple, just coming from the same show I was, who noted the stark differences between the Palace Theater and the First Avenue main room.
Palace almost felt more historic, I think, than First Ave. Like, First Ave has its, like, history with Prince and sort of, like, the, almost like the 80s sort of feel,
yeah,
whereas
yeah.
Palace felt a little more nostalgic, I think.
Right.
What is it? The general admission area?
Yeah,
where we happened to, like, walk up to, like, the balcony, and just looking up at all of the rows was insane. I didn't realize that they had, like, so many rows of seating.
Yeah, that would have been cool too.
No matter which venue you end up at, it will be the same crowd singing and clapping along to their favorite songs and screaming for more. And there will always be that one person who's yelling for the band to play something that's not on their set list. While there are stark differences aesthetically, both First Avenue and Palace Theater offer great acoustics, excellent hospitality, and are both within a half-hour train ride from campus. For Real College Podcast, I'm Sophie Dolan.
That is all for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Emily Allen, Liv Riggins, and Alex Schumacher. Managing editor and host is yours truly, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Music is done by Steven. It is awesome, Steven. Thank you so much. A special thank you to all the new reporters. They really jumped in and did an amazing job. I'm looking forward to everything that they're going to produce. Real College Podcast airs Mondays at 6:30. You can check out old episodes at radiok.org/realcollegepodcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.